What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed former Navy SEAL commander and founder of SEAL Fit, Coach Mark Devine. We talk about teamwork and building mental and emotional strength through things like breath control and crucibles or extreme challenges. This guy is one of the coolest human beings on the planet. I know you're going to enjoy this show. Also, our podcast just hit 100,000 downloads, and to celebrate, we're doing a raffle where you can win several months of free programming and nutrition consulting, as well as a lot of free gear. To enter that raffle, go to brutestrengthtraining.com/100k downloads. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/100k-downloads, DOWNLOADS.
Hey, Kez.
What's up, Coach?
Not much, buddy.
Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. It's been a while since we've chatted. I'm excited to catch up with you.
Yeah, me as well. Yeah, thanks.
So I don't know how much I've really told you about the impact that SEAL Fit's had on my life, but just very briefly, there are a few events in my life that I would say are my most defining moments. You know, one of those being going through a year and a half of drug treatment, you know, winning the CrossFit Games, training for and winning the CrossFit Games. And up there in the top 3 to 5 events in my life were SEAL Fit. And in particular, that first time that I made it 80% and then quit. It was the most humbling experience, one of the most humbling experiences of my life, but just all of the things that you guys pounded into our heads over the course of the 40 hours that I was there will never leave me. And then obviously I went back, did it again, and got a whole nother lesson out of it. So y'all changed my life, and I know everybody that goes through any of your programs has the same experience. So you're really doing some amazing things.
That's cool. Thanks. And Absolutely. Well done, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. So I've heard you say that you can grow more through cooperation than you do through competition. And that it's all about, in teamwork in general, is all about relating with other human beings. And really that can be, you know, in any relationship, it's all about building trust. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. Ultimately, you know, nothing really great is accomplished alone. I don't think even people who are, you know, victorious in individual sports, right? They have a team, you know, beside them and around them, you know, that they can rely on and that they're really know are rooting for them and have, you know, got their best interests at heart. You know, even Fronning, right? He's got a training partner, so he's got a swim buddy to train with. And then they go compete against each other in the spirit of harmony, right? So there is that co-opetition. And as you remember from Kokoro Camp, you know, we still require intense individual effort. Mm-hmm. You know, this, you remember this saying, it pays to be a winner, right? Mm-hmm. It pays to be a winner because your teammates are relying on you to put out, right, for the team. And in order for that to happen, you gotta put out 100%. In order for you to put out 100%, you've got to compete, right? But you're not doing it right to slay your enemy, so to speak, unless you are really in a warfare environment, right? This is for most of us in business and in athletics, right? We don't want to slay our enemy because we might need their help someday, right?
Right.
we need them, you know, to support us,
right?
And so what we found out through our training is that, you know, we want to unlock maximum individual potential and performance, but that's done best when you enlist the support of a team and you develop a deep level of trust, which then brings kind of an authenticity and a humility to your work, which, you know, further unlocks performance gains because now you're starting to access regions of strength that you really kind of ignored up until that part. Mm-hmm. You know, the old model, right, we're looking at brute strength as opposed to, you know, subtle strength. And
right.
You found out through Kokoro that it was that subtle strength, that non-quitting spirit and your willpower and your ability to really just ask for help and humbly provide help to others those types of subtle character traits really are what unlock that 20x potential that we talk about.
Mm-hmm. What types of people have a hard time with that, with the team environment? What kind of things do they battle with in their everyday life, especially?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I think a lot of people battle with it, but for different reasons. One reason is they've never really had to work in a collaborative team environment. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, like things came easy to them. For instance, all-star athletes, you know, high school, college, you know, quarterbacks or all-star, you know, wrestlers, where they just had this really natural talent. And so they kind of get propped up and they don't ever really required to, you know, to ask for help or to, you know, to feel like they need the help of the team. So in those, you know, in that situation, we have people who come to our training and expect that same level of, you know, that they're just going to be physical studs and perform like they did in the high school gridiron. And all of a sudden, you know, they realize that we set it up very quickly for them to fail, because, you know, part of our process is to first expose the weaknesses, right? So we set up all these physical these different challenges to expose physical, mental, and emotional kind of gaps. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once you get through those gaps, assuming you pass the test and you don't quit, then we start to work to close those gaps, right? Mm-hmm. Which is where you start to get stronger and more aware. And so you come out of it really, you know, by strengthening your weaknesses is how you get stronger overall. But they're weaknesses that you weren't aware that you had, or you knew you had them, but you were just kind of didn't know what to do about them, or maybe you were too afraid to go there, especially in the emotional category, right?
Mm-hmm. And do you say
so? That brings me to the second, you know, the second mm-hmm. type of person who really struggles is someone who really lacks, you know, emotional control. You know, someone who's emotionally immature, I would say. Right? We've had people quit our training, you know, in the first hour just because mm-hmm. they just got all ticked off and, you know.
Right. I've seen it.
Couldn't handle it, yeah. Couldn't handle the pressure that was being put on them.
Is there a... Do you have anything, any suggestions for those people that think they might need some emotional development? And I guess that's gonna come later when I talk about like building mental strength. But what are some things that are not Kokoro camp that can help people develop emotionally?
Well, any situation where you've got to work together in the spirit, you know, of cooperation, right? Mm-hmm. So we have other training that's not as physically demanding as Kokoro Camp, like a 3-day academy type setting. And that's a great place to start to learn, you know, some emotional control and awareness and some of those emotional skills. I think also, I've written about this, but a good therapy program, right, to start to, you know, uncover what I call your background of obviousness, and that is those, you know, emotional kind of drivers and or belief systems that can be holding you back, but they're really not obvious to you, but they're obvious to others who are around you, because they're the ones affected by it. You know what I mean? And so it's very helpful to have a coach, which is what a therapist is. Now, therapy's got a bad rap, but if you just look at it like an emotional coach, you know, you have a fitness coach, and it's a good idea to have a mental coach. Well, we call that a teacher. Mm-hmm. Well, why not an emotional coach, right? And if you can combine them all in one, which we try to do at SteelFit, then you got the Holy Grail, right?
Right.
A really valuable coach, right? And but what can you do? So therapy is a good thing, or there's some training that is all about exposing emotional challenges and weaknesses, and then to shoring it up, right? You know, fixing things and moving forward, so that you're not dragging those kettlebells of emotional baggage around, you know, torpedoing you right in the, you know, the cusp of success all the time. And one example is a group called Hoffman, so the Hoffman process.
Okay.
Others have found it through Landmark. Yep. I've never participated in Landmark. Others have found it through emotional focus therapy. I've done that. Mm-hmm. It's a two or three day event that's done with a spouse or a significant other. Man, mm-hmm. incredibly powerful training. You know, and the, another thing, again, these are all like mini challenges where you've just got to get out of your comfort zone.
Right.
Especially us guys, we're not used to doing that with an emotional, in the emotional world, you know what I mean?
Right.
We just like to stay in a really narrow lane.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean it's not present. Emotions drive, right. they are the fucking, the driver, right?
They really are. I mean, thoughts and emotions, right? So when we talk about, I know we'll probably get into this a little while, but with Unbeatable Mind, I really don't distinguish emotional control and mental control from each other. They are two sides of the same coin. Thoughts, you know, thoughts trigger emotions, and feelings trigger thoughts. And so you could just think of an emotion as a felt thought. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so they really, you can tackle them the same way, right? You would tackle the same way you tackle mental control and developing mental awareness and mental toughness is very similar to how you tackle emotional control, emotional awareness, and emotional resiliency. Mm-hmm. That's why we train them together. You know, we don't have like mental toughness camp and then an emotional resiliency camp. They are trained side by side and part and parcel of who you are as a human being, because those things are so enmeshed. You know, it's very difficult to tell where a thought leaves off and the emotion picks up, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to throw out one more recommendation to people. There's something, and I don't know if you've heard of it, Coach. My friend teaches something called mind-body bridging.
Oh, cool. No, I've never heard of that.
It's it basically combines like mindfulness practice with kind of hashing out some of your beliefs, and figuring out where you might have these kind of false beliefs about things or attachments to things. So they have a book called Come to Your Senses. It's a pretty easy daily practice that you can try out. I definitely recommend it to people.
I'm going to check that out. I think that sounds really cool.
It's very good. Coach, what I want to talk about how to promote a team environment in say like a CrossFit gym. And I'll preface it with this. I've seen at every gym people doing team workouts. What I usually see is it's kind of like a fun day Friday type team environment. Everybody's just laughing, having fun, which is totally cool. But how do you specifically promote people A, taking it more seriously, and B, right, setting an intention of we're trying to build, we're trying to come together as a team and get something different than just a good workout? How do you promote that in your gym?
Well, a lot of it is, again, the quality of the coaching and having the coaches understand that they're there to develop character first and fitness, you know, second, right? And so, the way we set it up is that, first of all, there's a difference between team training and a group workout, right? CrossFit is a group workout. Yoga is a group workout. People just come in, you know, they're kind of doing their own thing. Then they come together for the brief at the whiteboard. Then they go, you know, then they do their little dynamic movement and maybe some strength training, and then they get their WOD on. And then in most gyms, you know, people just blast out. They might do a little stretching, but they're out of there. You know what I mean? And, you know, the coach is left to clean up. You know, we even suffered from that for a while. It's like, really? You know, how come you can't stick around and help kind of clean up, you know, the team's gear and then your teammates' gear? And then, so that stuff has to be trained, you know. So with SEALFIT, what we do is we approach this whole team training as kind of a vehicle for developing the character of the individuals and the character of the team. There's certain things that we do differently, right? For one, you know, instead of just, you know, throwing the WOD up on the board and having people look at it and just briefing the WOD, we come together as a team, you know, when we begin training, and we do a little breathing together and we check in, you know, so we do a little breathing and then we brief the workout. And, you know, the athletes are encouraged to visualize or dirt dive the workout. And so we're starting to integrate the big four skills of mental toughness that we teach at SEALFIT into the training. And then we don't require that we time every WOD.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Some WODs we're going to develop stamina, right? We're just going to do like a, you know, more of a SEALFIT stamina workout. And that's just a fun team type training where, you know, we might pair up as couples or pair up as teams. We're not competing. We're just getting through the work, right? We're like the chain gang, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Working on the railroad. And it's just a lot of fun, right? It's just a lot of fun. And we're just getting some solid work in, like a good 30 to 45 minutes of just hard work.
Right.
Right. And those are just some of the, those are some of the funnest workouts because there's no clock, right? There's no 3-2-1 go where you're just a lot of flailing going on and racing and people, you know, comparing themselves against their teammates and whatnot, right? So we integrate those at least two times a week. And then when we do have timed workouts, which is, you know, more like four times a week, we'll do, we'll do the majority of them as individuals. Usually one we'll do as a team WOD. And, that's when you go balls to the wall, but we never, you know, the way we coach is that you never put your needs in front of the team or one of your teammates, right? So we teach awareness, you know, and if someone's just racing through and you're getting in the way of a teammate, or if the teammate is struggling and maybe with proper form and the coach isn't there to observe and you don't say anything about it, right, then, you know, bad on you. And so the point is that who cares about what your time is? Your time is going to be what it is. Don't, you know, race through it. You know, don't have poor form just because you're trying to put some numbers on the board.
Right.
Don't leave your teammates to flail or to suffer or to get injured, right, just because you're trying to win something, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just a whole different orientation when you're in that competition sense. Like, you are paying attention to your teammates, but you're striving to earn your trident of respect. And that comes not always by winning, but by winning gracefully, mm-hmm. right? Or by taking a second or a third just because you had to pause and help someone out, right? Because, you know, if a teammate gets injured, that reduces the team and it compromises the mission.
Right.
So that's really important. That's kind of the conduct of the WOD. And then after the WOD's over, we come together. And we don't like it, you know, unless it's really necessary for you to just blast out and, like, you've got an important meeting to go to, sure, you know, mm-hmm. get out of there. But we like to come together and do some stretching and have like a little debrief. And in that debrief, you know, you kind of like think through how the workout go and what did I learn. And if you have some regrets, you know, just get over it, right? Mm-hmm. You find the silver lining and, you know, go forward into your day with any regret. So we call that the pre-training SOP and the post-training SOP. And SOP means standard operating procedure.
Right. And yeah, that's an important part of it. Very important.
It really is, yeah. And so it sets it up as a team training session as opposed to a bunch of individuals coming together as a group to mm-hmm. train. And we like to do a full seal fit off WOD at least once a week. You know, I used to do it practically every day, but we gotten really busy, and so mm-hmm. we try to do one once a week where we all come together and we just crank through a full op WOD, which is about 2 to 2.5 hours worth of training. And it just feels so good to power through that with your team. Yeah.
And when you say we, you're talking about your coaching staff
and my
coaches staff, of SealFit? Okay.
Yeah, my staff as well as other athletes who've been really, you know, immersed in the SealFit training. Yes. We also have a CrossFit gym, as you know, and it's not a big gym. I keep it really as a playground for us, and we got like 75 members. But I would say about half of them have stepped over the fence to do SealFit training and mm-hmm. participated in, you know, like we just had Tommy Wernham, one of our coaches, go through. He's a CrossFit Games athlete mm-hmm. from back east too. Just go through Kokoro this weekend, and you know, it's just kind of expected that the coaches will all participate in SealFit, and then a lot of the clients do as well. So, you know, they jump in. We do SealFit WODs on Saturday mornings, and it's just great fun, great team building.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, that was hands down the best thing that our team ever did. After we won that first year, we went back just like, we just had so much trust in each other. It was crazy.
I bet.
Like nothing I've ever experienced, for sure.
Right.
Coach, what is the word, you talk about the word crucible a lot. What does that word mean? And then what, in your opinion, is really going on psychologically when people go through these crucibles?
Yeah, we have three different kind of training models at SealFit. One is the daily discipline model. That is doing the work day in and day out. And that's where the Apawads come in and our Kokoro yoga. You know, that's where you practice the skills of mental toughness. You practice the skills under the barbell and you practice, you know, being a good teammate. You're developing your character day in, day out. That's the discipline model. The second model is called the immersion model. And that's where we come together. And that's like the Warrior Monk Academy of Skill Fit Academy. So we have 3-day, we have an 18-day academy. You know, we've tried different lengths. I started out as a 30-day academy. Wow. Back in 2010. I did 4 of them. And I was, you know, I had other coaches helping me out, but I was there for 8 to 10 hours a day training with these guys. It was pretty cool. So that's immersion, when you completely immerse yourself into the training model. And we, you know, we lodge people, we feed them, and you train from 5 in the morning until 7 or 8 at night, doing the full spectrum of physical and mental skills, you know, the SEAL Fit model. Mm-hmm. So all sorts of really cool things. And using the environment, so you're in the ocean, you're in the mountains, you're in the grinder, you're in the gym, mm-hmm. you know, you're in the yoga studio. It's just a really cool environment. And when you come together like that and you kind of tune out the outside world and you live together, you know, the team bond is, it develops very quickly. And a lot of the learning happens, you know, around the dinner table and right. stuff like that.
Right.
So then back to your question, the third model is what we call the crucible. So the crucible is Kokoro Camp or our 20X. Now that is nonstop physical, mental, emotional, spiritual training, nonstop. Kokoro is 50 hours nonstop, and 20X is 12 hours nonstop. And we're creating a shorter, like 6-hour version. We're going to call the SEAL Fit Challenge to allow more people to mm-hmm. experience SEAL Fit, because it's a big deal for people to mentally commit to 12 hours
sure.
of ass kicking training. You know, sure. so we're creating a shorter version, like a 20X light. You know?
Nice.
Anyway, so Crucible is really it's like a cauldron, you know, it's like where you know, it's where you essentially cook metal, right? You boil metal and you burn off all the impurities in the process, right? And so that's what we're doing. Like we're burning off mental stagnation. We're burning off emotional impurities, emotional stuckness, I guess. And we're tapping into and charging up your willpower, right? What's kind of happened in our society is things have gotten really easy, and people have forgotten that the human spirit thrives on challenge. And we've gotten to the point where we now shirk from challenge. You know, it's kind of like if you've been in the dark for so long, at the first sign of light, you know, it blinds you and you just shy from it. It's kind of like that. So the challenge is there. I mean, you just need to step outside and go for a 24-hour ruck to find challenge. Mm-hmm. But nobody really thinks of doing that because, you know, the car is right there and also they can get a nice comfy car and drive to work. Or, you know what I mean? There's no need to challenge yourself unless you're, you know, like us.
Right.
Fortunately, there's enough of us who really learned, and especially I did in the SEAL training, through Hell Week, which was 6 days of nonstop training around the clock, you know, 140 hours or something, no sleep. Mm-hmm. And I learned, you know, that type of training just really changes you at all levels. And it creates a new sense of reality for you, right? There was life before Hell Week and life after Hell mm-hmm. Week. It's like there was life before Kokoro and life after Kokoro. And things just seem to get easier because you've gotten such insight into what your capacity is physically, what your triggers are emotionally, what your mental, you know, blockages are, and you know where you get stuck, and then you get the skills, you develop the skills to push through and to find new strength where you thought there was none before. It was mm-hmm. hidden from you. And so we call it the five mountains. You literally begin to cook and burn through resistance and burn through lethargy physically, mentally, emotionally, intuitionally, and spiritually. And each one of those mountains gets a little bit stronger, and then they also connect in ways they never connected before, right? So now we're starting to integrate. So what I think is happening in these crucible experiences is that you're integrating more as a human being. You come out of it more whole, if that makes any sense. So you feel more whole. You feel more peaceful. You feel more clear-headed. You feel more clear-hearted emotionally. Right? You're able to be more intuitive. You probably experienced this, that for weeks after Kokoro Camp, your senses were just like alive, and you were noticing things that you didn't notice before, and people were probably saying, man, what happened to you? I hear that all the time. People, man, you know, because you show up differently in the world, and people are influenced by that positively.
Absolutely.
So it's pretty cool. It's, you know, I would love to study it someday, like, but I'm much more of a experiential guy. Like, I don't need a research study to prove to me that something works. I mean, I know that stuff works.
Right. Absolutely. And it's hard to even comprehend without going through something like that, the kind of benefits that you get. But, you know, one of the coolest things for me was I just felt like I was in a completely Zen state for, like you said, 2 or 3 weeks. Like I had, you know, been meditating for a couple hours, and I was just in this state. The volume was turned down on life a little bit. I had a sense of, or like a greater sense of the things that mattered. You know, I wanted to be around my family. I felt super close to my team. I felt confident. Didn't feel a lot of stress. All from this physical, you know, seemingly physical task. I got all of those amazing benefits out of it.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? That is cool. So that I look at the three models, or at least the discipline model and the crucible model, you know, everyone can do that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they work so well together because the discipline model is every day by day in every way you show up and you try to get better through your training and through your practices, right? But, you know, and you journal and you try to track results, but it's easy to track the physical results, right? Because you got benchmark workouts and you can track your how much load you're moving. But it's really hard to track the mental, emotional, intuitional, and spiritual progress because that's not something, you know, you can put numbers to. It's not something you can test with a benchmark workout. So, but you're still growing, and it's experienced. Growth is experienced incrementally. And then all of a sudden, usually in what you call a breakthrough or a moment of, you know, inspiration or a major paradigm shift, all of a sudden you're just like, whoa, something's different, right? Or maybe by the way other people are reacting to you, you know? And all of a sudden you're getting more results because, you know, you're entering, like you said, you're entering into relationships with much more awareness, feeling much more grounded, not being as scattered. You're able to focus more. You're more clear, you know, clearly defined, and your goals are more clearly defined, and you know why you're doing things. You can always, you know, we always, like in Kokoro Camp, you can always answer that question, why? Why are you doing this, and why is this happening to me? So what happens is, you know, you do the daily discipline work, and the four mountains of the mental, emotional, intuitional, and spiritual are hard to see progress. But, you know, you can notice a little bit by looking backwards, right? But then what happens is you schedule yourself. You're ready for a big challenge. It's like, okay, I'm going to really challenge myself now. So I'm going to go to Kokoro Camp. So what Kokoro Camp does, the crucible, is it takes all of that training that you've done up to that point in your life, and it burns it in at a very deep level. And because the training is so intense, and you are working at a physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, spiritual level, right? You're going to break through to new plateaus in each one of those areas, as well as a new way that they're going to integrate, right? And so, it acts like a slingshot, you know what I mean? So you come in and you're like, I've been training, but I feel like I'm stuck, or maybe I don't feel like I'm making great progress. And all of a sudden, Kokoro Camp happens, and you're standing there on Sunday, and then all the after effect that goes on for weeks, all the lessons and insights that happen for weeks after, it just accelerates you to a whole new level. And then that locks in as your new level, and you go back to your discipline training again, right? But you're training at a much higher level in all those areas. Right? And then you do it again and again, and it becomes a new kind of pattern for your life where you're taking charge of your own accelerated development, and you're unlocking your own potential, right? and it never stops. It's pretty cool.
Right. How often do you personally try to schedule these crucibles for yourself, or do you even still do that type of thing?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've been working on non-physical crucibles over the past few years, but I still do, you know, I still do the physical ones.
I'm like curious, say, if you know, wouldn't mind, would you share some of those non-physical ones?
Sure. Last January, I did a 6-day silent retreat.
I knew it. Love it.
Yeah, that was a challenge. It was fun, though. Mm-hmm. We had a blast. That's an example of one. And right. I also did a 500-hour yoga instructor training. You know, that was a lot of work. It's like getting a master's degree in yoga, you know. So there's some that are self-designed, you know, like next one up, Tom Shea is a friend of mine. He's a Navy SEAL who wrote a book called Unbreakable, which is a really good read. And in there he talks about, you know, he's got one of his challenges that he had his kids do, which is fun. You know, it's a 24-hour ruck, but you can only take no more than 10-minute breaks.
Wow.
Right. And so we're going to go out and do this pretty soon. And the way we're going to do it is basically ruck for 50 minutes, take a 10-minute break, and we're going to do that for 24 hours.
That's
right.
So
and
see, cool.
See how far we can get.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
So there's a little bit of planning, of course. You know, you got to bring your water, or you can get a resupply. You got to, you know, make sure you have food, and you just go. And so that's a mental, emotional, spiritual type, you know, challenge, just like a.
How often would you recommend others do some kind of test like this?
Well, what I recommend is that you have a mini challenge every week. So, like the SEALFIT Opwad would be a mini challenge, or you know, go out for a 4-hour ruck on a Saturday morning, or do something that scares you a little bit.
Right,
you know?
Right. I love
but
that.
But it doesn't have to be huge. And then do something a little bit bigger every month. So we actually throw these up on the SEALFIT website. We have these monthly challenges. So one might be things that we've done in the past, or like 1,000 push-ups for time, or walk a mile, you know, mile walk. Lunge with a weight vest on, stuff like that. It's like, it's a little bit harder than an opwad, but it's still not going to kill you, and you feel great when you're done. And then to schedule the big challenge, like the 20 extra Kokoro camp, once every year, you know, 12 to 14 months, something like that. Those are the big ones.
Mm-hmm. That's when you do Kokoro. Or right. some kind of multi-day ruck, or some kind of adventure, something like that.
Correct. And it doesn't have to be physical, but if you can do something that is like that, that tends to be physical, mental, emotional, you know, it covers all five of those mountains, just because it really does require you to bring your whole being to solve the task, you know, to solve the challenge.
Right. Honestly, I don't know that there's a better one out there than that I've ever seen than the Kokoro camp, because that you have all of these, you have the fact that you're going to stay up for 50 hours and do the most hellacious work you've ever experienced, but you could go do that on your own.
Right.
What you don't have when you do that is the team environment, and you don't have the coaches that have been there before to teach you and hold your hand through this whole process.
Right, you're right. Those are really important. The team and the coaching. The coaches are, you know, all the SEALFIT coaches, as you know, not all, but a good number of them are former SEAL BUDS instructors, and they put, you know, thousands of people through the most demanding training in the world, and they're masters, right? These coaches are master level emotional development coaches, right? There's really nobody like them in the world. It's pretty interesting.
It is amazing. So I know we got about 10 minutes left. I have a few more questions for you. Sure. I know you're huge on using the breath as a way to train the mind. Can you just talk about that and it really take it wherever you want to go?
Sure. The four skills we call the big four are really a way that when you train them to be able to unlock, you know, flow on demand. Okay, so that's what's experience, right? You are integrating yourself. You're using these as a way to get control of your mental space and your emotional space, and then to be able to, with it, with that control, be able to create in your mind the outcomes that you desire. We call that winning in your mind. Mm-hmm. But it's really winning in your mind, body, spirit, right? And the first of those, let me just say, the big four skills are breath control, positive internal dialogue, visualization, and the ability to establish the right micro task that's going to lead you closer to victory. Okay. I give entire classes on these, so I won't get into the weeds because I'll get off track. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot there in each one of those big four. The unique thing about us is that we train these. We consider these practices that are to be trained day in and day out. And what happens when you train these and you learn how they work together and how they support each other, that's when you begin to really develop that inner space. You know, just like, you know, going to the gym and getting your WOD on develops the physical structure, the outer structure. These skills are your kind of daily WOD for the inner structure. The first one is breath control. And breath control really is the linchpin. As you remember from Kokoro Camp, you know, we said, okay, when the going gets tough, when you're pressed against the wall, when the waves are pounding in over your head and you're terrified and it's cold and it's dark and you've been up for 43 hours, the first thing you need to do before you act is take a nice deep breath through your nose so you breathe. And then in that space, in that pause, right, because you might be like really jacked up and, you know, you have instructions coming at you from three different people and, right, it's noisy and it's chaotic and, you know, literally there's grenades going off left and right. And if you're out of control, if your breath is out of control, your mind's going to be out of control. But if you could just pause and take a nice deep breath in through your nose to a four count and then out through your nose, what you do is you kind of create a little crack in the noise in your mind. So you create a little space. And in that space, you learn to kind of take control of time, right? Because time is very relative in your mental, emotional world, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't, you know, happen at the same perceived speed as the external world. That's why, like in accidents or crisis situations, it really seems like time slows down. Or when you're in a flow state, time slows down. Mm-hmm. Well, that can be induced, right? And the breath is your primary mechanism for inducing that kind of slow flow state. And so you're gonna take that breath and you're gonna create some space and you're gonna take another one, you're gonna create some more space. And in that space, you're going to think, right? You're going to not think those racing, random, non-productive thoughts, but you're going to create a new line of thought supported by, you know, the proper emotion, mm-hmm. which is going to lead you to victory, mm-hmm. right? Which is going to lead you away from failure and to victory. So, there's a lot there in how we train that and how we, you know, we kind of establish that. But the breath is one of the least understood but most powerful tools that we have. Mm-hmm. And we essentially breathe unconsciously. We've never really learned how to breathe properly. Some athletes get it, right? But unless you've been involved in, you know, deeply involved in a yoga program where breath control is a specific and very deliberate part of the practice, or you've been exposed to a martial art, you know, master who pretty much understands how to teach it. Unless you've been exposed to those, it's hard to find that in this country.
Right.
And so that's why, like, we've been teaching it since 2007. I coined the term box breathing as a drill to essentially learn how to take conscious control back over your breathing processes and to slow down your breathing, your rate of breathing. Mm-hmm. There's a few really important things to think about. One is, if you breathe through your mouth unconsciously, you're getting a shallow breath in. And a shallow breath is going to be mostly experienced in your upper chest. So you're not really activating all the musculature of your breathing. You're not activating your diaphragm and your stomach. And you're just using your upper chest to breathe. And when you breathe that way, you typically breathe like 16 to 20 times per minute, right? So you've got this shallow breath where you're utilizing maybe 40, maybe if you're lucky, 50% of your lung capacity, and you're just like huffing and puffing, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it's almost, you're completely unaware of it, right? when you breathe that way, you're unconsciously triggering your sympathetic nervous system, right? Just think about panting in a firefight or across a wad. You know, when you breathe through your mouth, you're telling your system, your body, your physiological system, that, you know, you're kind of in a little bit of a crisis. And so you need to trigger the sympathetic nervous system, which is going to come to your aid. And that's experienced, right, as a little bit more adrenaline, epinephrine, you know, your senses being heightened, your the pace of your thoughts, so your brainwave patterns elevate from, you know, beta to gamma. And it takes a lot of energy, right? And it actually induces stress. But stress is good if you're going into a CrossFit wad, right? Mm-hmm. Or stress is good if you're going into battle. But the Navy SEAL learns that even though that stress is going to give you energy and it's going to focus you, at the same time, if you can counteract that by triggering the parasympathetic nervous system to balance it out, then what happens is you've got the energy, but now you've got the calm kind of alertness that comes from the parasympathetic nervous system, and they can work together, right? It's not, yeah, I don't think it's accurate to say that one is turned on, the other's turned off. You can have the parasympathetic and the sympathetic kind of work hand in hand to keep you calm, coiled like a spring, mm-hmm. and focused while you're doing, you know, while you're in the middle of that firefight or crisis or wad. And it's pretty cool. And I think, again, and that's kind of experienced as more of a flow where, like, you're cranking, right? It's intense, but you're really calm and relaxed about it.
Right.
So the breath is the key to that, because now if you close your mouth and begin to breathe through your nose, what happens is that the nostrils slow down the air, right? It's just impossible to get as much air in when you breathe through your nostrils, because obviously they're just two smaller holes than the mouth. And so you can fact check this while you're listening here, but, you know, if you breathe through your mouth and try to fill it up as quickly as you can, it's like, you know, it's literally less than a second. But if you exhale all the air and breathe through your nose, you know, there's 2 or 3 seconds, right, to get the air in. And what you'll notice is that the air, when you breathe through your nose deeply like that, you automatically activate your diaphragm and you bring the breath deep into your lungs. So you fill up your lungs, essentially. You go from using 40% of your lung capacity to 100%, and you're slowing down the breath. So if we say 4 count in, 4 count out, that's an 8-count breath as opposed to like a 1-count breath. You know, and you're basically now taking it down to 8 or so breaths per minute, right? Which is very healthy for you. And so that you're slowing the breathing down now is also slowing and creating space in your mind, so you start to control the volume of thoughts. And then once you get control of the volume of thoughts, you can start to influence the quality and the directionality of those thoughts. Mm-hmm. So I've said quite a bit there, but the breath control is extraordinarily powerful. That's why we teach it as the first of the big 4 skills.
Right.
And it's pretty vast. There's a lot of different breathing techniques we teach at SkillFit in the academies and in my Unveil Mind program. But, you know, just learning that box breathing where you go inhale to a 4 count, hold your breath for a 4 count, exhale through, you know, this is all through your nose, exhale for a 4 count, and then hold your breath for a 4 count. And do that every day, mm-hmm. for a minimum of 10 minutes, a maximum of 20 minutes. And, you know, if you just do that, you'll have a profound experience, and it'll have a major impact on your life. It's really powerful stuff.
That's one of those things that, like the crucible experience is kind of like the lead domino that affects everything else. So when we have all these different pieces of advice, whether it be training or mental, like physical or mental training, breath work is one thing that if done consistently seems to affect everything else and make everything else easier. Would you agree?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of those things as well that you can't really just watch a video about and then get the benefits. It has to be practiced to really experience what it means and what you can get out of it. I have one more question for you, Coach, before we wrap up. What is something that you believe that people, like the people around you in your immediate community or online community, think is absurd or crazy?
Say it again.
Such as, you know, some people think that we can, that like we're all connected spiritually or something. What is something that something you believe that other people may think is taboo or crazy?
Man, there's a lot. That is hilarious. Well, here's one that, you know, just, again, it really depends on your orientation to life. If you're really scientific, then, you know, I think a lot of people think that the brain and the mind are the same. And they're not, right? To me, the brain is an organ, just like your heart, which provides the executive functions, right? It's like the executive agent of your mind. But your mind goes beyond the brain. That's why, like with artificial intelligence, just being able to map the brain and find those, you know, complexities in the brain is not going to recreate the experience of mind for an artificial being, right? For an artificial agent. Because the mind is really experienced all throughout the body and even around the body in the etheric field. And you can place your mind in different areas and experience different perspectives and different, you know, different things. You know, like we have one of our training experiences in the academy and also our Unbeatable Mind training is called the Breath Empowerment. And it's essentially a 45-minute breathing workout. Like, it's super intense. And you experience a radical shift in what's going on, what your sense of mind is during this training. It's weird. It's wild, right? And like, I've experienced my mind, you know, above my body. I've literally been in different rooms, or you know, off this planet, even. You know what I mean? And it's not my brain. It's very clear that what's going on is not my brain, right? And then also, you know, you have your heart, right? And your heart and your belly, your belly's called the little mind, your heart's called your heart mind. And, you know, they're starting to understand that they really do have some processing, mental processing power, right? And they're an important part of your mind, as well as your nervous system, you know, and your spine. And then, like I said, the energy body where, you know, it's perceived in that etheric field, or what, you know, was also called the aura around you. And that part of you is always interacting with the environment and with other people and even with animals, and there's an information exchange that happens through that etheric field. So that's a long answer to a shorter question, but I think people probably would think that was kind of a weird concept. Some, you know, certain types of people, if they're very rational and
sure,
they don't have any evidence of what I just said. You
know? Right. Well, I appreciate that, and I absolutely love it. I love it. Well, I took you over. Coach, where can people find you, and what do you want them to know about, you know, what you have going on right now or in the near future?
Thanks. I can most often be found physically at SEALFIT headquarters in Encinitas, California. So if you're in San Diego, come by. It's a good idea to find out if I'm going to be around, if you want to see me. Otherwise, just come by and say hi or drop a workout and, you know, or grab a wad. It's a lot of fun. Most of our SEALFIT training is starting to be done off-site, by the way. So starting next, or actually this year, all our Kokoro camps are held off-site at Vail Lake or South Lyman Training Center. And academies are going to be held off-site in a more like forward operating base environment to give it that kind of more gritty SEAL feeling. But I'm here at headquarters. Our online presence is sealfit.com, S-E-A-L-F-I-T.com. That's the main website. I have tons of, you know, blog posts and podcasts and stuff all found there, and all videos about our training. And if someone's really intrigued with the training or the concepts that we discussed here, Kaz, then I think a good place to start is my book. So I have a book called Unbeatable Mind, which is really neat. And I have an online training program by that name, unbeatablemind.com. And about 5,000 people have done the training, and they've found it extremely valuable. And we go really deep into all the principles that we touched on today. And then for business leaders, my book, The Way of the SEAL, has been really popular to help you learn how to kind of train and think and act to lead like a SEAL. So it's The Way of the SEAL is more externally focused on action. Unbeatable Mind is really focused on how do you train that inner space for self-mastery in service to others.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I got a new book coming out in April called Kokoro Yoga. That's going to kind of kick off the yoga training program that I've been teaching to the Kokoro grads and to the SEAL candidates since 2007. So I'm excited for that.
And that's a book, you said?
Yeah, that's a book, but we have a two-day seminar. That's the one I mentioned. I'm partnering with Greg Amundsen to try to bring into the CrossFit community. Greg's really into we look at it as, we look at yoga as a warrior development practice. So within that, we do include different breathing training, visualization training, concentration training, obviously movement training using traditional yoga poses, but also CrossFit, body weight style CrossFit and combat conditioning, fight sequences. So it really is kind of a warrior's yoga. In fact, the original name of it was Warrior Yoga, but I had to change the name because there's a trademark conflict. Shit. Yeah, so it's now Kokoro Yoga, which is pretty cool too. I like that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's starting to grow in me.
And then did you say your website, sealfit.com?
Yeah, that's probably the main one. That's one of my blogs, and that's where a lot of the information is at right now.
Okay, awesome. Cool. Thank you so much, Coach. I really appreciate it. I feel like I could talk to you for hours, but this is some great shit for people to start chewing on.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been a lot of fun, Cass.
And, all right, Coach.
Best wishes to everyone, and we'll see you around soon, hopefully.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
You bet. Take care, buddy.